Act 4. Chapter 32. 2 months before the Emperor's murder. The 14th planet you were sent to kill was the thriving, phallogenic satellite of a hot little star. It was lush and terrestrial, with a thick carpet of vegetation and plenty of animal life, and nobody particularly wanted to be responsible for taking it out. Unfortunately, it was right in the current path of Number 7, and Number 7, as Teacher put it, would view such a planet like a hot pie. You were the youngest. It was left to you and to Mercy Morn. Kitherea's body had never been found. An attempt was made in those first few days to search for it, but it seemed that the only one still anxious about it was the Emperor. You knew that Augustine suspected Mercy Morn, though you did not know why. Ianthe suspected Autus of squirreling her away, no matter your doubts. You know, she persisted in saying, for sex reasons. She had not blamed you for failing to murder him. Surprisingly, nor did the Saint of Patience, who had elusively apologized for his failure to account for the incinerator alarms. You had not seen any great changes between him and Mercy, except that they were fractionally more short-tempered with each other, or between him and God, or her and God. There was no embarrassment, nor any pause when they met at breakfast or in the corridor and clasped arms with the same warmth or lack thereof that they had always shown. The total absence of appropriate shame made you suspect that this had happened between them before, a thought that made you want to give yourself a lobotomy. And, despite the overwhelming disappointment of God, the Saint of Duty had tried to kill you twice since then, but even he seemed to be weary of it. And your wards had held. At the start of your latest excursion, your teacher surprised you. When you landed on the planet's surface and confirmed that the atmosphere was breathable.
Keep an eye on what you're breathing in anyway, said the Saint of Joy. Planets are dirty.
She had given you a pack and a water canister and a beeper and told you to go away. There had been no room to land the shuttle at the planet's lush and forested pole, and so you were faced with a short hike.
You can do it by yourself, said Mercy Morn.
She was snappish and fretful, but Mercy Morn was always snappish and fretful. She had not become any less snappish and fretful in the last handful of weeks, simply abstracted, as though her eyes already looked to the river.
I'm going to go do the moonlit next door. It'll be covered in reflected thallergy. Time yourself. Don't let it get away. Most of the life on this thing is in the ocean, but if I've made a mistake, don't get eaten by some sort of creature while you're under.
You said,
Sister, how am I meant to protect myself when I go under? I'm not the genius 2-year-old, am I?
She barked. There were red rings about those hurricane eyes, and she kept wringing her hands together and looking down through her lashes when she spoke.
I'll be back in about 6 hours. Goodbye.
It was the first time you had been left alone on a foreign planet. The earth beneath your feet reeked of moisture, and little worms and beetles moved within it. The foliage was a violent effusion of greens, fresh, lemony greens, and dull, dark, piney greens, and in the middle, dun greens, and a rustling, bristling canopy of leaves. The air was hot and wet, like the inside of a mouth. The sun beat down on your head in gouts of ultraviolet radiation. Your eyes squinted against the light, and the sweat made your hair start to curl thickly about your neck. It very badly wanted cutting now. 2 days ago, God had taken you into his little sitting room and given you a glass of water, which showed that he had learned, and a biscuit, which showed that he lived in optimism. And the Emperor of the Nine Houses had said,
Harrowhark, when the door comes down behind me, I want you in that room.
You had said,
No.
Harrow, there has been no progress. That's fine. I understand, but I want to give you more time. I want you to have a future.
You had said, Augustine I has trained me in the river. My necromancy there is nonpareil, and has been since the first. When the beast comes, I will be ready to meet it on its turf.
God had looked at you, and he had quirked his mouth in something like a smile, and said, You're even stubborner than I am. I thought I'd cornered the market.
There were many days when you felt his disappointment as a vice, as a long-imagined Hessian pressure against the bones of your throat. There were equally as many days when his nightmare eyes relieved your dry exhaustion like a long, chilly drink of water. Your love for God was akin to your love of the beautiful riverbed edge of the Iliac crest. Your love for God was like those moments of reprieve immediately after waking, when you were not sure who you were. Those moments of living in another Harrow's skin, a Harrow who understood everything with a purity of completeness. It was a relief to worship thus. You had once thought your capability for adoration had been consumed when your eyes had bent upon that face in the tomb, dead and irresistible, the interment of beauty. You were relieved to find some scraps left over. You raised the hood of your mother-of-pearl Canaanite robe over your head. The sunshine beat down through it and patted prismatic light over your face. Birds shrieked above. They were not large creatures, and you were not afraid of them. But you almost pitied them. It was an uncomfortable thing to remove the soul of a planet like this. It would be the first time you had done it, and the first time you had killed any planet alone. The creatures would not die immediately when the planet did, but they would slowly come to change, and in the end, they would be Thanagy mutants who could not reproduce. A rather ninth house death, and the death that came for all flipped planets, in the end. The forest floor was gnarled and uneven. For the first hour, you walked stoically and you sipped your water. When you grew tired, you spent the second hour in the arms of a large, hulking, ambling skeleton, and you had to brush away the branches and leaves as a second skeleton stormed ahead, cutting down all this boil of Thalagy as it went. It was with an ache like nostalgia that you thought of Dreaber and home, that you thought of the vast gyre at the very apex of your temple, which seemed like a pinprick from the bottom tier, that thin, watery cloud of pumped atmosphere and the dead of space beyond. You thought of the murmurous prayers within the chapel. You thought of the Secundarius bell, its booming profundity, its black tongue's clangour, of waking to the clang, 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 as some ancient bell-ringer hyperextended his biceps in trembling sacred eagerness to yank that rope. The body walked beside your construct. The sun did not dry the melted ice upon that indistinctly coloured hair. The moist warmth of the jungle around you did not impede her, and exertion brought no flush to those long, thinly muscled arms, nor to the slender, gracile legs, nor to the dead cheeks. She had been with you very often of late. You saw all the signs of your undoing. You had few months to live. It could be quite easily counted in weeks now. God had been correct. You had not changed. You were not fixed. You were the last lone assailable lictor. The others were now distant from you, looking to the resurrection beast that came to punish their mortal sins and kill their kindly prince. And yet, there, in the alien slather of forest, among the ferns and fronds and greenery arching against a skyline that was a more reticent verdancy paling into navy blue, you could almost believe that you had the capacity to be happy again. You were an unfilled hole. But even a hole might be content in its emptiness. At this point, though you did not know it, You were a mere kilometre from this insubstantial contentment's obliteration. A hole might also be filled with worms.